Hi, this is Jeannie Drisco, bringing you an episode of The Art and Soul of Healing. Today, on the wings of Alliance for Natural Health, we will be traveling to Oregon to visit with Dr. Mary Fry. Mary is a naturopathic doctor and educator with a special focus on the nutrition-focused physical examination. Currently, she is on faculty at Maryland University of Integrative Health, serving as Associate Professor of Nutrition and Herbal Medicine and Lead Faculty Fellow of Academic Affairs. I'd like to welcome Dr. Mary Fry. Well, hi, Mary, and thank you for coming aboard today on The Art and Soul of Healing.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So a lot of people may not know exactly what a naturopathic doctor is. Can you give us a little bit of your background?
So a naturopathic physician typically enters into the program with a bachelor's and a degree and certain science requirements, not so dissimilar from medical school. After the first couple of years, we focused on biology, chemistry, anatomy, physiology, all the kind of core medical science courses. But then we diverged from classical or conventional medical training insofar as the modalities in which we learn to treat various conditions are different. So we're instead of focusing more on pharmaceuticals, which we do learn a little bit about, and surgeries and other modalities in conventional medicine, we would treat somebody more with nutrition other modalities include a kind of chiropractic manipulation, homeopathy, herbal medicine, and there are several other modalities that sometimes naturopaths will learn on the side or combine with those. But those are some of the core ones that are taught in naturopathic medicine and are used to varying degrees depending on the practitioner. And then pharmaceutical medications and surgery are certainly learned about as a part of a larger treatment approach, but are typically seen as if they need to be used, they're used after some of these other ones are tried or in more severe cases.
So did you have a specialty track?
Well, I did some additional certifications in homeopathy and in shiatsu. But beyond that, there wasn't really specialty tracks in the training that were possible.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Thank you for that. I want to tell you a little story. So your chapter in the Integrative and Functional Medicine Nutrition Therapy textbook about the nutrition-focused physical exam is a thing of beauty.
So thank you.
Our copy editors particularly loved this chapter. And since it was right in the middle of the textbook, they called it the centerfold. So they loved it. I don't think you knew that.
No, I didn't. So. Thank you.
So what is the nutrition care process? I think there might be 5 steps to that.
Essentially is looking at assessment and diagnosis from a perspective of looking at lab testing. What I focus, of course, is a physical exam. But looking at these different pieces and how they all interact into somebody's more holistic, a more holistic approach to addressing nutritional imbalances, if you will, or nutritional needs.
And then when you intervene, you do so with more of a natural approach, not only just supplements, but diet and lifestyle changes too. I know that for a fact. So how do you monitor the patients going forward?
Well, so there's a number of ways. A physical exam, of course, is a key one. Laboratory findings are another one that are useful. And there's just a lot of different functional labs that are possible. The textbook, all the chapters really address pretty well in varying degrees. There's also, of course, one of the primary ones, one of the most important is just the patient history and what they tell you, your client or patient tells you about how they're feeling and what they're noticing. And so all of these are used in conjunction typically. And then if there are other things possible through maybe a condition they have that they're monitoring in another way, that can also be really helpful input often.
And how did they focus in naturopathic school, medical school, did they focus on food, nutrition related history? What exactly did that look like?
Well, they did, but I have to say, having now taught nutrition to integrative health nutritionists for a number of years, the focus is much more in-depth and evolved. And some of that's maybe just the evolution of the field since I was trained in naturopathic. We learned about basically doing, you know, a pretty thorough diet history. We didn't get into the whole array of them as much as nutritionists do, the different types of like food frequency questionnaires and so forth, touched on it. And then it would be also looking, though, that I think is a thing that is unique to integrative health nutritionists and naturopaths in part, is looking at food allergies, different reactions to food with a much more broad and kind of inclusive array of ways of both diagnosing and working with those conditions and sensitivities and so forth. So that's a part of it. And then we also looked at diet from other perspectives. So I had ended up taking some courses, for example, in Chinese dietetics in the naturopathic program. And that's sometimes covered in some of the integrative nutrition programs as well, and looking at food as energy, as well as food as, you know, chemical building blocks of nutrients. And so we try to look at that perspective as well. And then also just people's relationship to food and how different health conditions and psychological states of being and so forth can affect someone's food intake.
And then when you use testing or biochemical data, how do you, first of all, how do you go about gathering that? Well, what tests do you decide upon first?
Well, I think oftentimes we try to get to the root of something. So as an example, maybe somebody has a chronic health condition that isn't directly about the GI tract, but that we know can really be impacted by GI health. So I'm thinking, for example, of like autoimmune conditions or people who have skin conditions. And so maybe a place that I might start with something like that would be to look at actually a functional GI test and food allergy testing. And then from there, I might look to do further testing as needed. But for example, if I were to order tests on all like a whole wide nutrient panel, while it might be helpful, there you could expect to find a lot of balances there because the person may have aberrant GI health, and so they're not digesting and absorbing well. So it would be maybe a tiered approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you might wait for those nutrient tests when their GI health was a little bit better, for example?
Uh-huh. In part, that's driven by, you know, the patient's ability to pay for and kind of integrate all that you find from different labs. So
it certainly can be expensive. There's no doubt about it. So this important concept, the nutrition-focused physical exam, it took really long to be folded into our nutrition practices. Why is that? Why did it take so long?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. From what I've learned and just experiences, I think that we're at the era in which we are at, because this is also happening in conventional medicine, physical exams becoming less popular because it's more of an art maybe in some ways than a science. I mean, there's certainly science behind it, but you don't get this immediate feedback, like a yes or no answer. Yes, they have a problem, you found it on the exam, and no, they don't. There's this huge wide range of normals and different degrees of imbalances. And so I think that ambiguity is sometimes, students don't like that, especially when there are laboratory tests and diagnostic imagery and other kind of ways of evaluating that seem more cutting edge, and they seem like they give more certain or complete answers. And so I think that there are people working to try and integrate things more, both in conventional medicine and also in nutrition. But I think that they've run up against some of those obstacles.
Yes. I have some good friends that have practiced for over 40 years. And that's one of their biggest laments, is that the physical exam is being shortened or forgotten or overlooked or underutilized. And I'm not sure how we're going to restore this important part of our relationship with the patient.
Yeah, and it's a good question. I should add too, time as a component, I think, as well, right? It takes some time to do the exam and integrate the findings. And sometimes tests are easier, can be sent off to somebody else to do. And so there are a lot of factors that play into it. I mean, I imagine that a key component would be really education and just within the schools, educating and incentivizing maybe the exam. But there is a little bit of a uphill battle or resistance that has to be overcome, I think, in that process.
It's huge. Well, first of all, you were talking about the nutrition-focused physical exam, and a lot of my colleagues don't even value nutrition. So, you know, nutrition education in conventional medical training is just neglected. So you're an educator. How do you think we can improve this? Can you get your students interested?
I can to a degree, but, you know, I would like to get them even more interested. I think sometimes they think similarly, you know, I could do it with a test. It gives me more information. It's faster. And I think it's more, you know, accurate. So it's trying to find studies and examples in which that's that you can refute that. And I think one of the things is really also looking at, I think it's physical exam is such an important tool in terms of relationship, not only between the practitioner and the patient or client, but also within the person themselves, the patient or client themselves. I mean, they're getting a closer and stronger relationship with their own body because they're realizing that some diet or some other intervention that they're doing, they watch over time how that impacts them and they can physically see it. I mean, it's one thing to feel it, I think, like, oh, my stomach feels better when I eat this way. It's another thing to see your nails change. I mean, granted, it takes a little time, but, or to see changes in skin and other findings on the physical exam that they, some of them, which they can visualize themselves or use simple little tools like that they can get feedback on. So I think that the more we can do that through patient and client education and also trying to have our students really experiment with some of that and see that for themselves.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
The more we can potentially impact that. And even if it's only a finding here and there or a small exam here and there, if somebody can really track things over time and notice differences and experience them, I think that that can make a change.
Yeah, it really does get the students energized too. And they see that there's this problem that they've had and then they can make these changes and it really does impact them. And so then they get fired up about that. I've seen that before as well.
Mm-hmm. And I might add also, I think that it's also, you know, labs are helpful, but many of them are against normal ranges that we compare a patient or a client. And so when it's a, when it's simply against the person's self, you can really see that change. Like it, we're not comparing them to anybody but themselves, and we see these changes happen. And so it's a little more individualized in a sense too, and like a N of one.
Well, how did you structure your approach to the nutrition-focused physical exam? Do you always follow the same sort of path when you're examining a patient, or do you tailor it?
I tailor it. And part of that's just time, right? You know, it's, I would love to have a kind of challenge within myself of wanting to be so thorough and do everything. And yet there's not the time and it's sometimes patient buy-in for all of that. So you kind of sometimes target it. So you sometimes they even point out something they want you to look at or issues with absorption. So checking skin and checking nails can be really helpful as a first step. And then you might, you know, in the next exam fit in some others after you, I mean, for example, if you do a thorough new patient appointment and you integrate things and you see things from their intake form and you start to appreciate patterns, you might go back and say, oh gosh, I really want to follow up with this exam and the next appointment and then kind of delve deeper.
You know, it really, you had so much information in this chapter. How did you learn this? Did you just learn it over time?
I was pretty busy. I had to, so I learned the basics of physical exam, not so much functional in naturopathic medicine. And then I was tasked with developing a nutrition-focused physical exam course for the doctorate in clinical nutrition at the school that I teach at, Maryland University of Integrative Health. And I had a month and a half to do they had someone lined up. Well, actually, Michael Stone, who contributed to this book. So I was blessed with having his outline to get a sense of like, what is the scope and range to just kind of even get my head around it fast. That he might look at doing, because I didn't take a functional nutrition program. Of course, I did, was a naturopath by training. So I thought, I want to make sure I'm thorough. And so I did a lot of research and fast and in depth as much as I could. And then I just kept trying to evolve it each time I taught the course and just add more to it and kind of appreciate questions that came up and things that are coming up in the field. So yeah, I tried to pull that in.
There's nothing like teaching to really push you, is there?
It's true.
Well, do you follow up your exam with lab testing at times?
I do. And sometimes I like to actually just compare them too. So maybe I'm doing labs that I can add in, say, one more lab that might confirm the findings in a physical exam. And some of that is just I find patient compliance sometimes is improved when you have more than one source of evidence, in a sense. And then also it just gives you more parameters to evaluate over time. But if I can save, you know, save some redundancy, you know, wherever I can, I do in terms of patient, what they have to pay and just what they have to go through. But it is nice when you can get more than one stream of evidence.
So you're teaching in Maryland, but your practice is on the West Coast. Are you in California?
Actually, I'm in Oregon, a little outside of Portland. Most of the teaching I do is online. And then I teach, I classically have taught on campus this course, this physical exam course, and another course or two in a given year where I go on site for a weekend.
I need to put your contact information on the Art and Soul of Healing website. So you'll have to get that to me.
Okay.
Because I don't think I have it completely. So what are the benefits of medical nutrition therapy in patients with chronic medical conditions? I mean, there's so many now and we're just overwhelmed with them.
Yeah, there are so many. Well, I think one of the things that many of your listeners probably already know, but is that chronic health conditions just are, it's like being in a fairly extreme, depending on the severity, stress state all the time. And so they just put so much on the body in terms of just a lot of physical things. And one of them is just that the body tends to burn through nutrients faster when in a stress state and is more inflamed. And so that causes aberrant metabolism of a number of nutrients and just processes in the body. And so it is just like this high need state in a sense. And so we have to, you know, really tailor. We're already in an environment, I think, where our food is not the level of quality and nutritional density that we once had, you know, in terms of our ancestors. And so we're already kind of operating with like one hand tied behind our back. And then those with chronic illness are just so much more disadvantaged. And so we have to be really strategic about finding ways to get good quality nutrients and really vital food into their bodies, be it through the diet and or often supplements are needed. So I think everybody has that to a degree in our time, especially with just environmental toxicity and other things that also can tax nutrient stores more. But I think it's particularly true for people with chronic illnesses.
Absolutely. Do you have a patient that comes to mind that was really helped with this approach?
You know, there are a number of them, but I think people, it really, a lot of times what I see really remarkable progress is when people have food allergies that are discovered. A food allergy can cause so much havoc. And I think when someone can identify that and really appreciate the impact that that has on their well-being, that just can really make a huge difference. And then ideally, you know, we get a chance to really work with them to restore their overall health as after having had allergies. And then they get even that much more gain and hopefully can, you know, maybe have the food in time, even in small amounts. But that's an example when I think of someone who really has a lot of change.
Mm-hmm. And when you support those patients, let's say with food allergies or sensitivities, are you also supporting them with supplements, let's say?
Oftentimes, I think that they initially can't probably get their nutrient needs met in many cases by diet alone. There are some exceptions, like if there are a lot of GI problems, so they're having a lot of inflammation or other symptoms, you know, I have to kind of weigh out how much will they absorb supplements and you really be able to utilize them. And if so, what forms might be best and how much do they really need to get it by food? And some patients, if they're willing, I mean, they can go on a more, you know, somewhat extreme or strict diet, like a autoimmune paleo or something that's really nutrient dense, but that's hard for a lot of people to follow and just not.
It is so hard. Do you take care of, let's say, patients with cancer?
I haven't so much because I'm having practice in Portland. There are a lot of people who specialize in different integrative health specialties. And so I tend to refer out for something like that because I just don't do as much of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What does your typical patient population look like?
More patients with mental health issues, or at least that's their presenting complaint, though they usually have other concomitant problems. So it could be anxiety, depression, bipolar, schizophrenia. I also like working with patients, but this usually comes as a part of what I do with different chronotherapeutic strategies. I'd done some research in that in the past, and I just think it's really powerful and kind of simple but powerful technique. So often those are the people that I see, and then they have a number of other issues. Maybe they have some chronic health issues as well that come into mm-hmm. that.
Why don't you describe the chronotherapy? I think it is fascinating.
Well, it's based on the knowledge that we have these internal rhythms in our body. So we not only have day-night rhythms, but we also have seasonal rhythms and so forth. So it's been discovered, for example, that people with seasonal affective disorder are actually more likely to have bipolar, and people with bipolar really are typically more adversely affected by shifts in the day-night rhythm or in seasonal rhythm. So they can get more thrown off by jet lag, more thrown off by differences in routines, for example, often, especially people with bipolar 1, as the research shows. So there's a whole school of therapy, which is really fascinating. It's called interpersonal and social rhythm therapy. And it's all based on things that we would kind of say in integrative health is something that's just good medicine anyways, and that is having daily routines and rhythms. But it's really almost like non-negotiable in a sense, it's been shown with people with bipolar 1. And so they really regulate their rhythms of when they eat and sleep, when they socialize, when they exercise, as a means to regulate their mood. And so that's a really, I just think it's kind of fascinating. And then I would use amber glasses with people. As it starts to get dark outside, I'd have them wear those inside, or even if they're out and about, to just start to settle their rhythms down. And I found people have really good responses to that with bipolar, but actually just the average individual who maybe has trouble winding down at night and maybe has their nervous system a little amped up, that can help as well. And then
that's really fascinating.
Yeah, it is fascinating. You can do dawn simulators, which can be helpful in the winter time to really help someone kind of slowly wake up and get their rhythm going, because it's harder to get up and going when it's dark out, of course. And so we have to kind of almost like trick the body into a new day-night rhythm when our days are so much shorter.
So in that particular patient population, do you find a specific group of nutrients that might be deficient, or?
Well, B vitamins are often ones to look for sure. And then vitamin D is certainly one to keep in mind. I usually would want to check the vitamin D status of people going into fall to make sure that that's not a variable, since it can also impact seasonal affective disorder. So look at vitamin D. Depending on their digestive health, I might also look at others like vitamin A or iron, especially in women of reproductive age. That's often trending low and can impact their energy and mood. So, but yeah, definitely the B vitamins would be some of the key ones, I think.
Okay. This is really wonderful information. I want to go back to the tables in the Integrative and Functional Medicine Nutrition Therapy textbook. As I said, they are a work of art. So,
thanks.
Yeah, these are tables that I think clinicians need to keep at their fingertips. For example, on the section that you labeled in the abdomen, you know, it clearly lays out how to prepare the patient for the exam and what the findings might mean, such as the Sargent's white line, where a simple scratch test tells us if there may be adrenal insufficiency. I'd never heard that before, so I really found that fascinating.
It is interesting. There's that test where you can actually just do on any area of the body where it's a similar phenomenon. You just sort of scratch the skin, and people who are more allergic will just have a really strong histamine response. And that's also really a similar kind of phenomenon, but it's interesting to look at.
Yeah, that is so fascinating. And you also noted the inability of a patient to walk and talk concurrently, and that may indicate a risk of falling, and it may be related to polypharmacy. So there's simple things that you can do. Can you discuss that a little bit more?
Yeah, so I think that this is part of that testing to just see about somebody's their balance and their likelihood of falling. And so I can just say as a background, I think that it's just, and again, in a kind of an empowering tool, an educational tool, this is one of the many physical exam findings that you can look for. And so I think just educating patients who are older about their, you know, if they walk with a friend, can they maintain a conversation? And if not, that, you know, this could be a question that could be posed in a history, when taking a history. And if not, then and it might be, you know, they might be a good candidate to evaluate with this testing to just see, are they at more at risk, and then put different safeguards in place to prevent them from having a fall, since we know that that can have such a negative impact on their health thereafter.
How often are you finding polypharmacy in your patient population?
Well, as I don't treat people who are, you know, I tend to treat people who are maybe like teenage to middle age, upper middle age a little bit. I haven't treated a lot of people who are much older, but nonetheless, because I have worked with people with mental health issues, polypharmacy is often a problem because they don't respond to one antidepressant and then another one there is added. And then maybe an anxiolytic because they're having mixed depression and anxiety. And so they just, and then because of the medical legal issues with taking people off of medicines for mental health issues, it just snowballs often. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And then medications for the side effects. And so it's tricky.
It is tricky. Are you finding the psychiatrists are working with you, or some of them?
Not often. I mean, yeah. I always put out a call with the hope that to let them know I'm not going to take your patient off any medications without letting you know, and I'm here to help, and I'm happy to talk. But I don't get too many calls back. I found this is a kind of, I don't mean to overly generalize, I've often found psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners are a little more receptive and interested in collaborating, psychiatrists a little less so. Although I must say I have worked with some psychiatrists who are really exceptional, but that's not always the case in terms of their desire to collaborate and interest.
Right, right. You know, you wonder if it isn't a time issue for them too. You know, the nurse practitioners are fabulous. I've always liked working with them. We had one in our clinic when it was open, and I just so appreciative of that, those nurse practitioners. Well, you had a wonderful quote in your chapter from Sir William Osler, and it went, learn to see, learn to hear, learn to feel, learn to smell, and know that by practice alone, you can become experts. So I think that was a wonderful thing you added.
Oh, thank you. You know, I guess I also could say that part of that quote, I think, hints at this, that I think one of the other things that's really amazing about the physical exam is it's just, I kind of appreciate self-sufficiency and the ability to figure things out and use what you have. And I think the physical exam is so powerful with that. I mean, we could be in the middle of nowhere and yet with power outages and Wi-Fi outages, and yet we could figure out some issues with somebody without anything else. And so I think that quote really underscores that as well. I just think that ability to really utilize a skill is a skill set and an art form in a way.
Are you seeing patients virtually, or are you seeing them in person?
You know, most of what I have done has been in person, a little bit virtually. In part, that's just because of the laws of reimbursement that were pre-COVID. And then I have been on a bit of a leave from my practice, actually, so I'm not seeing any patients currently. So I haven't had to do more virtual care, although I know many have been really utilizing that.
Mm-hmm. So you're focusing, I think you told me this, on education primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do you do in Oregon for fun?
Well, I live on a little bit of land, so I have my hands more than full in terms of trying to work on stuff in there. There's a creek and trying to get some gardening going. There's a lot of wonderful areas in the outdoors. So there's high desert that I like to go camping to. There's mountains to climb, mountain lakes to swim in. Those are all pretty fun. Ocean, not too far away. It's nice.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. We're also on a few acres here, and we have a little lake in the middle, and we've been gardening and swimming. Yeah, it is nice. It is so nice. Well, I want to thank you for speaking with me today. You're one of my heroes. So,
oh, thank you.
You know, I hope you'll come back again so we can discuss more about physical findings if you'd agree to that.
Yeah, I would be interested.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to be learned.
There is. Well, do you have any parting words?
I would just say maybe actually in the realm of incrementalism, which I think is Atul Gawande, if I'm saying his name correctly, just start small and do like little things here and there. Pick one week and decide, you know, I'm going to try this one small exam or check my patient's nails. And some of this can be done virtually, actually. You know, you can have them kind of show you things and tell you about things that you might be able to see even through webcam or through photos. So just start small and implement one small thing and then see how that works for you. And just slowly build your repertoire if you find it's helpful.
Oh, that's great. And they can certainly keep your chapter handy for any questions because they're answered.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think they are. Well, thank you, Mary, so much. And you have a spectacular weekend.
Thanks, you too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your work on the textbook.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mary, and I will look forward to having you back to discuss more of the nutrition-focused physical examination. And a special shout-out to Alliance for Natural Health USA for standing in the gap for our health freedoms. Please become a member today.